I'm Duarte Geraldino, and you're listening to The Takeaway. Tenzina Vega is off. We continue our series on guns and policing. Today, we're looking at the relationship between police and guns in other countries. In Scotland, violent crime has been rising in recent years, but the vast majority of police officers in Scotland and throughout the UK do not carry guns. That means when there's a potentially violent situation, those officers deal with it in a drastically different way than police do in the US. Chuck Wexler is the executive director of the Police Executive Research Forum. Back in 2015, he took a trip to Scotland with a group of American police leaders. What he saw there surprised him.
We had been asked by the organization Police Scotland to come over and look at leadership issues. And it was in the middle of the Ferguson issue back in the United States. And I was at a recruit graduation. And I was talking to a recruit in Scotland, and it dawned on me that the police in Scotland do not have guns. So it hit me, well, wait a minute, how do the police in Scotland deal with someone with a knife or a rock or something like that that would cause a police officer in the United States to perhaps use deadly force? And it got me thinking, why is it that police in the United Kingdom who don't have guns are able to defuse situations that police officers in the United States are trained to use sometimes deadly force? And that got a whole different way of viewing how we were dealing with some of the incidents in the United States that don't involve guns but involve something like knives and rocks and 2x4s, things that police officers may sometimes use deadly force. So that was a turning point, an epiphany, if you will, in our thinking.
That's so radically different because in the USA, when you think about police officers, the first thing that comes to mind is that each of these men and women are armed. And here you go to Europe and this particular police department, none of them are. That 2015 trip to Scotland was significant for you. What was it like connecting leaders of American police departments with Scottish police officers, the ones who were unarmed?
So I came back to the United States and I called up, you know, a number of police departments. I said, look, this is interesting. Similar situations, a person with a knife in Glasgow and a person with a knife in Boston, same thing. But somehow the police in the United Kingdom have to figure out how to resolve it without using deadly force. In the United States, sometimes they will de-escalate that, but sometimes that person will continue using the knife and police will wind up taking their life. But what police department said to me, you know, you can't compare the United States to Scotland. It's completely different, and that's true. We have 300 million guns. So what I thought, well, you know what? I have to bring police departments to Scotland. So I brought 25 police chiefs to Scotland. We spent a week studying what they do. And then the turning point there was I knew that to say to American police, we need to adopt what Scotland is doing, wouldn't make sense. And one of the individuals from Houston, Texas said, you know what, Chuck, we're already doing what Scotland's doing. And I said, how so? He said, well, our SWAT team in Houston, Texas uses a team approach, slows things down, uses time and distance, and most importantly, talks to people, communicates to people. You know, a big part, number of these cases are people who have mental health issues. And so taking a gun out, pointing it at them, and barking orders doesn't work. So that was an important turning point, was it's not good enough to simply say we need to adopt what another country's doing. How do we take what Scotland's doing and applying it to the United States? And that was a big turning point. When we first came out with our guiding principles, you know, we were pretty much roundly criticized by, you know, some of our contemporary police organizations. But the more we explained it, the more we developed training, because this training is also to keep officers safe themselves. You can't negotiate. You can't talk to someone if you're not safe. So it's all about the sanctity of human life, both of the police officer and the person they're dealing with. We absolutely believe that with the right training, police officers can rethink the strategies they use. You know, when a police officer is in a situation, say they're called to someone's home and a parent has a child who is, you know, hasn't taken their medication or they appear suicidal, they want the police to help resolve the situation, get their child under control. The last thing they want and the last thing the police officer wants is somehow for that situation to go wrong and the police officer winds up using deadly force. And we have since developed a protocol for dealing with what's called suicidal people, but suicide by cop situations, in which somehow the person you're dealing with will act in such a way as they want the police officer to take their life. So what we have done is developed a protocol so they can recognize that. And previous to this, police officers would immediately look at it as a use of force situation, say if they saw a young person with a knife, and then they told them to drop the knife, and then the person and the police officer would pull out their gun, and the person in some kind of crisis would start walking toward the police officer and saying things like, shoot me, shoot me, shoot me. Up to the point where we developed this protocol, police would simply take out their gun, point it at them, and scream orders. And what we couldn't understand was, why would someone walk toward a police officer yelling, shoot me, shoot me, shoot me? The only way to analyze that and understand it is that person wanted the police officer to take their life. So understanding that person in crisis, recognizing that pointing a gun at a person in crisis like that is pretty much the worst thing you can do. So having the police officer step back and communicating, talking to the person.
Is that the key to changing the culture? That decision, that split-second decision by an officer to recognize, hey, this person either is not going to use force or wants me to shoot him.
It's absolutely key because, you know, for a long time, the prevailing thinking in policing was police officers have to make split-second decisions. And that's absolutely true. Say, for example, if you have an active shooter situation like in Dayton, Ohio, where seconds matter and police, you know, have to do what they have to do to stop that person from killing people. These other situations I'm talking about are really situations where you believe you have someone who's acting in an erratic way, someone who is, you know, in some kind of crisis. In those kind of situations, slowing it down, communicating, using time and distance, help to resolve it. That person is probably looking for someone, something. It could be someone on a bridge. It could be, you know, someone in a home who is off their medication, someone who could have lost their job, lost a girlfriend. They're in some kind of crisis. Recognizing what that crisis is and communicating is so effective.
Thank you so much, Chuck.
Thank you.
Chuck Wexler is the executive director of the Police Executive Research Forum.
And you can find all of our stories from the series at thetakeaway.org/guns. We'll have one last piece in the series for you on Monday.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.